You're listening to WGXC ACRA, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Brooklyn Vegan runs down the lineup for the 2023 edition of 24-Hour Drone, set for May 27th through 28th at Basilica Hudson in Hudson. The annual event has been on hold in person since 2019 because of the COVID-19 pandemic. This year, the show is back in person with Yuka C. Honda of Saibo Matto, Wolf Eyes, Liturgy, Sarah Hines, Laura Ortman, and others performing at the event, which each year is webcast at WGXC.org and broadcast on 90.7 FM. The Basilica Hudson website has all the details about the 24-hour drone show May 27th and 28th at Basilica Hudson and will air on WGXC.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Igers Kildas and Louisa Sabin Kildas of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Anchor, and you've tuned into the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, May 25th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. News 10 in Albany reports that Columbia County is the latest local county to declare a state of emergency because a southern governor or a big city mayor might bus migrants there. No migrants have been bused to Greene, Columbia, Albany, or Rensselaer counties, but they have now all declared a state of emergency because someone might. Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell said the order is to, quote, preserve public safety and hereby render all required and available assistance vital to the security, well-being, and health of the citizens of the county, unquote. Morrell also listed his county's shortcomings, saying, quote, as a county with no homeless shelter and being chronically short of hotel-motel space, we have already been required to house some homeless in other counties. In addition, Columbia County already faces medical care and transportation shortages, unquote. Read more about this story at the News 10 website. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Greene Media that on May 22nd, the Catskill Central School District Board of Education voted for the tax break for the existing Athens generating plant. The Greene County Legislature approved the tax break for the power company at its April 19th meeting. Usually tax breaks are used to lure a company to a new area, but legislators here decided to extend the tax break to Athens Gen. The school had to sign off on the matter as it receives less funding if more property tax breaks are issued locally. The story does not detail exactly how much less taxes Athens Gen will pay to Greene County under the extended tax break. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Jamel Cutler reports for Columbia Greene Media that the Restore New York Communities Initiative is granting $1.5 million for the CAS redevelopment project in Hudson. The project is attempting to build a year-round farmers market and public space for special events along the Hudson River waterfront. Hudson Common Council President Tom DiPietro said, quote, everything that goes in down the riverfront and the train station contributes to the overall development of that part of the city that has been dormant for way too long, unquote. The project will cost $4.5 million total, and developer Ben Sain has declined to say how much more money will be needed to complete the project. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And full disclosure, Tom DiPietro is a volunteer WGXC programmer. Hatriano B. Sastro Wardio, reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that smoke from raging wildfires in western Canada has been wafting into the Hudson Valley this week. The National Weather Service tweeted, quote, when larger particles in the atmosphere, such as smoke or dust, scatter light, they scatter longer wavelengths better, unquote. So the smoke from distant Canadian wildfires has caused vivid red sunsets in the Hudson Valley this week. A passing cold front with a small bit of rain on May 24th may clear the air locally. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, May 25th. Local early morning temperatures range from 38 degrees in Medusa to 44 down in Dover Plains. Regional average soil temperature is 54 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high. Looks like the trees are still the heavy hitters. Oak, birch, and mulberry are the top pollen producers. Though you might not know it, we're still knee-deep in allergy season today because it's going to be sunny but cool with some stiff winds, so grab a hoodie or a jacket just in case. A high of 65 happens at 5 p.m., and right about that time, over at Left Bank Cider in Catskill, you'll be able to find some hot soup. Staff from WGXE, and if I can lure them out of their basements and adjust them to the sunlight, a couple members of the Makers / Thingularity crew will be there. That's Left Bank Cider in Catskill. I had time for all that because the rest of the forecast is boring. 40 degrees overnight. Not a big deal. Most plants will be cranky, but we'll get over it. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 71 at 5 p.m. Overnight, 45 degrees. Saturday, sunny, a bit warm, hits 82 at 3 p.m. Overnight, 55 degrees takes us into another warm day. Sunday sees a high of 85 at 3 p.m. And there is no rain in sight. So if you're seeking water and you head to the river, today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:36 a.m., high at 7:45 a.m., low again at 2:39 p.m., then high again at 8:44 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 65 degrees and the tide strength is low. Sunset today will be at 8:03 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:22 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances have fallen to 5%, but expect things to change as we are still in the upslope of solar cycle 25. Sunspot AR3115 is starting to get rowdy, so we'll see what happens with that. Plasma winds will be average at 536 kilometers per second with a thin density of less than 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, with fair conditions across the board and good conditions below 4 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 153. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice, the world's only 12-hour strong man on the air, here on We Love Radio.
Size. girl is on her own.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have updates on stories we've been following, including Arizona candidate Carrie Lake's election challenge and Shasta County, California's decision to hand count ballots. First to Arizona, where Monday the remaining claim in Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake's lawsuit challenging her loss has finally been dismissed. Lake, who disputed the 2020 presidential election and then her own 2022 election, contended that signatures on mail-in ballots weren't properly verified, a claim for which the judge said she had provided no credible evidence that violated the law. It's unclear whether Lake will appeal. Last week, a recall of Shasta County, California Commissioner Kevin Cry moved forward with the approval of the recall petition language. KRCR reports that a citizens group must now collect over 4,100 signatures to put the recall on the November ballot. Cry is allied with MyPillow CEO and election denier Mike Lindell. Cry and the conservative majority of the Shasta County Commission voted in March to replace existing Dominion voting systems ballot tabulators with a system to hand count ballots at a cost of almost $1 million. Shasta County has over 111,000 registered voters, and hand counting is expected to take over a week and cost the county tens of thousands more in labor costs. We have more on these stories and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Truth needs to be our foundation. Common sense can no longer be an uncommon virtue. And in Florida, we proved it could be done. We chose facts over fear, education over indoctrination, law and order over rioting and disorder. We held the line when freedom hung in the balance.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis officially declared his candidacy for president Wednesday, promising to take sharp action by constructing a wall at the southern border and not giving in to what he called woke ideologies. A Morning Consult poll found former President Donald Trump is still the GOP frontrunner with 58% support. DeSantis trails with 20% support, up from a mid-May poll. Meanwhile, congressional leaders returned to the White House to hammer out a deal to raise the debt ceiling before a possible default on June 1st. North Carolina Republican Greg Murphy is worried about a default and feels both sides of the negotiation have drawn their line in the sand.
Each side is saying, look, this is what we want to do. The White House is saying we want a clean debt ceiling, we want to raise things, and we want to raise taxes. The Republican side on the House is saying, look, we're willing to raise the debt ceiling, but there have to be spending cuts.
Though President Biden has indicated he won't be invoking the 14th Amendment to raise the debt ceiling, Connecticut Democrat John Larson feels it may be necessary. He noted Republicans and Democrats have come together before to raise the debt ceiling.
When you consider that we raised the debt ceiling three times in Donald Trump's 4 years, and then to again have Republicans take the country to the brink and hold the economy hostage, and therefore also holding people hostage.
Department of Education officials testified before a House subcommittee on President Biden's student loan debt forgiveness program. This week, the House of Representatives passed a joint resolution of disapproval to overturn the program. The bill now heads to the Senate. James Cavall with the Department of Education notes the growth of the U.S. student loan program and the debt it creates have erased the benefits of people going to college.
1 in 3 borrowers never graduates. They are left with debt but no degree. Historically, more than 1 million borrowers default on their loans every year. And after a decade in repayment, typical black borrowers owe more than they originally borrowed.
Wednesday marks a year since the shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. More than 600 mass shootings have occurred in the U.S. since then, according to the Gun Violence Archive. President Joe Biden has called on Congress to pass an assault weapons ban, a national red flag law, and numerous other gun safety measures. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
If you are hungry or just want to help community radio, come on out on Thursday, May 25th to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill to their community soup night. WGXC is organizing this night, Thursday, May 25th, with a live on-site broadcast, DJs, and soup. Come on out for a bowl of soup, conversation, and some music. Each Thursday night, Left Bank Ciders hosts a community soup night where volunteers make soup with proceeds benefiting a local nonprofit. All proceeds go to Waveform WGXC 90.7 FM. On Thursday, May 25th, the Left Bank Ciders in Catskill from 5 to 7 p.m.
This is Organic Grooves, William Parker and Hamid Drake with All Between. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Petri Dish was a member of the founding collaborative of Radio Mutiny, 91.3 FM in Philadelphia, and the founder of the Prometheus Radio Project. Petri Dish goes around the community helping community radio stations like Hudson Mohawk Magazine with engineering need to get on the air. We welcome Petri Dish to talk about his work and helping other community radio stations.
So great to be here. Thanks a lot for having me.
So I guess to start, tell us a little bit about yourself and what do you do at these radio stations when you go to help them out?
Well, one thing about radio is that unlike the internet, it involves antennas and towers and lots of wires and cables and things, and they take some maintenance. Now, not that the internet doesn't have all those things, but those things are kind of made invisible to us, and they're sort of behind the ownership of, you know, the big platforms and whatever. But, when I was starting getting involved in this, there was a real important thing that we thought as people involved in making media was that ownership of the platform was very important, that you didn't want anyone to get between, you know, the community media organization and the listener. And the people that were trying to, you know, to listen to it, you know, and that's a real different thing than say something like Facebook, where you write a post, it goes into a mysterious black box. Maybe it comes in, maybe it doesn't. Maybe 100 of your friends see it. Maybe 3 of them see it. No one knows. It all just whatever's best for Facebook's advertising is what comes out of it. With community radio, your voice goes straight into the transmitter and it goes out over the airwaves and then people pick it up and nobody can get in the way of that unless someone turns the radio off.
Or there's a glitch in the system, which is what you do.
Yeah. So it's my job to sort of figure out, like, you know, right now we're trying to figure out, sometimes y'all are having some silences when the computer kicks off, or there's a transmitter out there that's part of Hudson Mohawk Red that's up in a tree. So sometimes a branch falls on it. So all kinds of things can happen.
So one of your projects happens to be up in Alaska, and you're trying to take this radio station and update their systems as well, but also try to convert them to clean wind and solar. So tell us a little bit about that.
That's it, exactly. Yeah, our station, the station that I'm working with, is called Raven Radio, and it's in Sitka, Alaska. And that is a booming metropolis of 8,000 people in Sitka, Alaska. But in the 1980s, when that station started, they realized there were also a lot of people in some indigenous villages nearby and also some fishing villages where there was no radio coverage at all. So they built a network of repeaters that in these smaller towns of like 80 people, 50 people, 100 people, 500 people. And so they have 7 repeaters. And like a lot of things, just like it got put on and it worked. And it worked for a long time. And those places are really hard to get to. You can only get there on a boat or a seaplane. There are no roads that go to any of them. There's no road that goes to Sitka. There are roads inside of Sitka, but you can't drive on the road from Sitka to any other city because it's on an island. And the same with all these outlying communities. So they were very hard to maintain. And so a lot of them have just been kind of running with, you know, someone checking them out every year or two, but no major renovations. So the station decided it was time to do an update of everything so that they could be reached by internet. They could be troubleshot when things gone wrong. I would say right now, like out of the 7 repeaters at any given time, like 4 or so are working. And it's too bad because it's a real, it's a lifeline to those communities. So anyway, what we're doing is while we're replacing the transmitters, we're replacing the antennas, and while we're at it, one of the biggest issues in Alaska is energy. It's ironic because so much oil and gas is mined there, or is drilled for. But in fact, all the oil that comes from Alaska has to go down to Seattle to get refined and then shipped by boat back up. So gas is $10 a gallon there, and a lot of these villages, they only get one diesel shipment per year. And so it's they're very conscious of like every watt that they use. So we decided that for our installations, we would, to whatever extent we could, we would add wind power and solar panel, and also large batteries. That's a real big part of it, is for a long time, batteries have been very expensive, difficult to maintain. But in the past couple of years, as a result of electric cars and some serious industrial policy in China and some other things, lithium batteries, which are just so far superior, are becoming not cheap, but possible, you know?
Yeah.
I think we spent $7,000 on a battery bank that probably like 20 years ago would have been much less good and probably would have been $30,000 or $40,000. So we're adding a lot of capacity to be more reliable and to use less diesel.
Pete, you've honed a lot of skills over the years. I'd like to take a quick look back from your founding of the Radio Mutiny and Prometheus to what you saw as the perils and promises back then, and what you've seen today and into the future.
Sure. I mean, I think when I first was involved in a pirate radio station, we were activists that were involved in different movements, and we felt that our voices were always stifled. You know, there would be...
Philadelphia.
Yeah, we, you know, there'd be 100 or 1,000 of us on a street corner, and then we couldn't even get into a newspaper with, you know, a protest against war or something like that. And so we started a pirate station, and, you know, that kind of undermined the control that corporations had over what people had. Over the ensuing time, that hasn't gone away, but there's become a second challenge. And that second challenge is one way of shutting down free speech is to control the channel and not let anything through. The other way of shutting down free speech today is to flood the attention. You know, to put disinformation, false information, nonsense, and confuse people or make people despair. And I think that, you know, that's a new challenge for community media, is to figure out like how to like make content that is good, that holds people's attention, that truly informs. And we have the added challenge of a giant industry that's based on just distracting everybody to death. It's only gotten more complicated since I started, not less.
So going back to Alaska, some of these cities, this radio is important to their community. This is how they get their news, right?
It is. Yeah. There's, internet is very hard to come by. And in fact, in Alaska, if you use more than a certain number of gigabytes, your internet goes off for, until the end of the billing cycle.
Whoa.
So there's a story about a town hall that like some kids got in and watched some YouTube video, and the whole city government had no internet for the next like 6 days. just because like some kids got in and watched YouTube for like an hour. So that's a big challenge there. So internet's not available, and so people use radio a lot.
So what are some difficulties that you're facing in updating these translators, changing the power sources to solar and wind?
Everything about the logistics there is tough. Like the towns you can't get to unless you go on a seaplane or a very slow boat. And shipping things up there is difficult. Everything costs twice as much up there.
Getting around.
Yeah. On the other hand, I had an amazing month last summer where I never took a cell phone out of my pocket because there's no cell coverage. Oh, I couldn't tell time because I don't have a watch and I stopped carrying around my cell phone. I never used keys. I never used money because there's no store in town. I just had to bring all the food I was going to eat. So it was a great vacation from the, modern life. Although I spent the whole time installing solar panels and trying to connect up internet links and, all that sort of thing. So it's a blessing and a curse,
At the same time, yes.
It's great to get away from the internet until someone's trying to contact you to tell you that your shipment of panels is on the way.
Right, yeah. So within the last 30 seconds, is there anything else you'd like to say or anything we didn't ask you that you think is important?
Just so happen to see Hudson Mohawk alive and thriving. You've got a really unique volunteer-driven news model. I've seen very few like this around the country, and I think you're way ahead of the curve in terms of of what you're making here.
Well, thank you for joining us, Petri Dis, and talking about your very important work about keeping radio stations going.
Always great to be here.
Thanks. You, Pete.
For this week's Peace Bucket, we're joined by Dan Wilcox of Veterans for Peace. Now, Veterans for Peace traditionally has joined in the Memorial Day Parade in Albany to show that there are veterans who strongly believe in the need for peace. So, Dan, what are some of the details about the upcoming delegation, and can people join in?
Yes, that's true. The parade is one of two parades the city of Albany does around the themes of veterans and, unfortunately, the military, Memorial Day and Veterans Day in November. We've been marching for many years in the parade, and the parade is organized by a group of veterans organizations. But we've been accepted for many years by them. So the parade this year will be held on Monday, May 29th. And once again, Veterans for Peace, the Tom Paine chapter number 10, will be marching, or I like to say walking because I'm not marching anymore, to remember those who have died, both civilian and military, in wars present and past, and to bring our message of peace and the goal to abolish war to the event. We are inviting all those opposed to war to join us to work for peace. Please bring signs and banners with messages of peace and maintain a peaceful, peace-loving demeanor while in the parade and beyond. And we're inviting people from any group or no group, but just that they agree with that idea. We will gather on that morning, jumping ahead here, May 29th, Monday, May 29th, at the corner of Central Avenue and Partridge Street in Albany at 9 a.m. And then the parade will start off at about 9:30 and proceed east on Central Avenue and continue east on Washington Avenue to Hawk Street. And over the years, our presence has really delivered a strong message that resonates with the spectators along the parade route. So if anyone's anxious about our reception, we always get a good reception, and we are accepted by the veterans organizations as well. So we invite anyone who believes in peace to walk with us, and you can bring a sign if you want. You don't have to. Just your presence there is what's important.
Now, to a certain extent, Veterans for Peace, the name is, sort of self-explanatory. But, maybe what are some of the key goals? I understand you actually call to the end of all wars.
Yes, that is the basic aim of the Veterans for Peace is to abolish war. It's just that veterans, particularly those who have actually fought in combat. I didn't. I was the lucky one. I was drafted during Vietnam, but not sent over there. But particularly combat vets, many combat vets feel very strongly that what they saw was horrific and should never happen again. So that's what got the Veterans for Peace going. Veterans for Peace has also been involved in other issues because they're all connected, as we know. For example, during the Black Lives Matter events a few years ago, the Veterans for Peace was at probably every demonstration all across the country, because there are thousands of us across the country. And they were also involved in the environmental movement. War is a great polluter of the earth. So if anyone's really interested to see how it's all written up by the organization, you can just go to veteransforpeace.org and it's all there.
Now, you mentioned earlier that many veterans, particularly combat veterans, who've actually experienced war, you know, just are opposed to war in general. And one of the issues has divided a fair amount of the peace community in the United States is, you know, whether or not, you know, I think most people say, you know, Russia was wrong to have sent troops in, invaded Ukraine. United States was wrong to have provoked over the years Russia into such a misadventure. But, you know, many peace groups, but not all, say, but what we should not be doing is, you know, supplying weapons to any combatants because that just leads to more people dying. How do you feel about that? And how do you respond to people say, well, what about the right to self-defense?
Well, that's essentially the way I feel, is that if I'm a peace activist, how can I support sending weapons of war to any other country? And while, you know, Russia was wrong to do the invasion, people who say, well, the United States provoked them, that defense is, what do the lawyers call it in a trial? That defense is the devil made me do it. And, you know, Russia made a bad choice. The international community, like the UN or any of these larger, and all the major powers in the world, are really complicit in all of this, in that they have to stop war. You know, I can go out on a street corner and stand there, and we can march in the parade and with our peace signs and all that, but can't do it. We really, as an individual, can't do the actual thing of stopping wars. Whereas international community, international diplomatic community, that's their job, and I think they should be doing it. And to make a differentiation between, you know, personal violence, I'm not a pacifist, but I'm against war. And the distinction I like to draw is that if I have an argument with somebody and we get, you know, maybe somebody punches me in the nose and maybe I punch them back. But then we don't go and then burn the person's house down. We don't go and then destroy their neighborhood or the school where their children go or the hospital in the neighborhood. The conflict is dealt with on an individual level. But what makes war so horrible is that people who really have nothing to do with it, other than the fact that they live in a particular place, are victims of that. And that, to me, is what the horror of war is, that it's not a matter of resolving a conflict between two individuals. It's these major powers. And right now we have the ability with the atomic weapons, United States, Russia, and other countries in the world who have nuclear weapons, to destroy the earth and destroy everybody on it. So, and if you want to provide arms to another country, for example, the Ukraine, and you want them to win, you want them to defeat the other guy, the only logical result of that is giving them an atomic bomb, which I know we're not going to do. but it's absurd just to give them some fighter planes or something and kind of pat them on the back and wish them good luck.
Well, we're almost out of time. Let me get a last question in. I remember a lot of the veterans groups were very active on the issue of depleted uranium, which particularly was in some of the weapons that were in Iraq and veterans came back and had health concerns. So what about this idea? I guess the United Kingdom is now sending weapons with depleted uranium over to the Ukraine. Not a good idea, a bad idea?
That's a bad idea. I mean, just on the weapons alone, but the depleted uranium is diabolical. And what it does to the environment. And again, to say it again, you know, war is horrible for the environment. And if you're an environmentalist, you certainly should have no position where you would want to support any war.
So if people want more information about Veterans of Peace and they can join you on the 29th, what, start at 9 o'clock?
Yes, that's right. We welcome people to join us and work for peace.
You got a website?
No. No, we don't. Okay. But I can give you my email address if you want. I can, if people want to write it down, I'll repeat it. It's dwlcx46@gmail.com. Again, dwlcx46@gmail.com.
Thank you very much, Dan Wilcock, Veterans of Peace, well-known local poet. And this is Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you would like to be on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, now's your chance. Want to fulfill a long-time or newly emerging desire to be on the radio? Want to become part of the community conversations on Wavefarms WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears? You have an idea for a short recurring segment? Tune into a Zoom meeting May 30th at 6 p.m. online. Contact content at WGXC.org to register and with any questions. But we would love as many voices as possible to be on the radio at WGXC, and this is your chance.
U.S. grid administrators warn there's an elevated risk of widespread power outages across the nation this summer. The IRS has issued guidelines on what constitutes domestic content or American-made when it comes to solar products for tax incentives that have recently been passed. And new solar and wind installations over the last 3 years have exceeded government projections by about 50%. I'm Jay Warmke with Blue Rock Station, and this is the news from the solar industry for the week of May 22nd. Now, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, which is an administrative agency that oversees aspects of the grid, announced recently this week that there is what they anticipate is an elevated risk of widespread power outages due to extreme weather events over the summer. A lot of this comes from global climate change, as well as the fact that quite a number of fossil fuel power plants have been shut down over recent years that have traditionally serviced the grid. Advocates for fossil fuels have stepped in and said this is an example of why the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy is a bad idea. Now, NERC came back and said, no, we're not trying to signal that this transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy should be paused, slowed down in any way. They're really just saying that because of these combination of events, we need to be careful during this transition, and it should be managed carefully. Now, the parts of the country that are going to be affected most are going to be the Western United States, Texas, and the Carolinas. The IRS has issued guidelines on what constitutes domestic content when it comes to the 10% additional tax credit that's part of the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed last year. So if it is American-made, then you can deduct an additional 10%. This is an attempt to bring a lot of the manufacturing of solar products back to the United States. So what constitutes this? Well, the IRS said it's basically a two-tier process. When if steel and iron, it must be 100% American made. And that really means that the metals must be melted and poured here in the United States. The manufactured products, however, are going to be a little bit more complicated. These would be, for example, solar panels, inverters, disconnect switches, things of that nature. What they're saying is that 40% of the content must be American made. Now, there was confusion around what constitutes, for example, a solar panel. How you would judge whether it's American made. There's silicon, there's raw silicon that must go into the solar cells. Must that be mined in America, for example? The solar cells themselves, do they have to be manufactured in America? Or can they simply be brought in and the panel unit be assembled here in the United States? Well, the initial IRS guidelines is basically that the final product must be assembled in the United States to constitute that it is, in fact, American-made. Now, that's significant for solar because currently about 95% of all of the solar cells that are distributed across the world are made in China, and about 80% of the panels themselves are made in China. President Biden has vetoed a bill that came from the House and the Senate that would overturn the pause on tariffs associated with four Southeast Asian nations. Well, those panels from those four nations constitute about 80% of all of the panels used in the country. So it severely disrupted the industry. So last year, the Biden administration said, let's put a two-year pause on these tariffs. Let's investigate this. The IRA was passed to try and encourage domestic production. Biden's veto means that it would have to go back to Congress, receive two-thirds vote in both the House and the Senate, which seems very unlikely. New solar and wind installations over the last 3 years in the U.S. have exceeded government projections by about 50%. Currently, about 27.67% of all of the generating capacity on the U.S. grid comes from renewables. This is up about 5% from 3 years ago when it was just over 22%. So far this year, about two-thirds of all the new generating capacity installed on the grid is renewable. And projections say that by 2026, we should be seeing a little over a third of all of the generating capacity on the grid coming from renewable energy. Now, this will mean that natural gas generating capacity will go from 44% currently to about 42%. Coal, production from coal, will drop from about 17% to around 14%. And production from nuclear energy will decline from about 8% to about 7.5%. And that's the news from the solar industry for this week. We'll see you next week.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Austin Jefferson reports for the Daily Freeman that Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger is proposing a $15 million housing action fund to increase the housing supply there. State and Hudson Valley officials have identified an affordable housing crisis in New York and locally. Metzger proposed the fund at a special meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee on May 18th. Metzger would take $15 million from the county's surplus fund balance to start the fund, then keep it going with 25% of the hotel occupancy tax. Metzger says rent for one- and two-bedroom apartments has risen by 40% locally, while wages have stayed stagnant or declined. She says that 12% of homeowners and 29% of renters in Ulster County spend more than half of their monthly income on rent. Metzger said, and I quote, "The trends are very bleak," end quote, and that, and I quote, "These trends are unsustainable from an economic perspective," end quote. Oversight for the fund would come from a new housing policy and oversight committee with representatives with experience in housing, finance, development, and land use. Metzger would appoint 4 members and the legislature would appoint 3 under Metzger's proposal. Officials in Kingston and Hudson have also discussed efforts to help the affordable housing crisis, but little has been done anywhere locally on the issue. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that a bill to stop the discharging of radioactive material into the Hudson River has advanced this week through both the state Senate and Assembly Environmental Conservation Committees. Anyone releasing radioactive material into the Hudson River would be fined up to $25,000 a day, with daily $50,000 fines for a second violation. The only opposition to the bill is Holtec International, the company that owns the decommissioned Indian Point nuclear plant that plans to release radioactive material into the Hudson River later this month. Holtec said in a statement, and I quote, "As part of both the operation of nuclear power plants and during the decommissioning of reactors, plants discharge treated liquid effluent according to state and federal permits and well below safe release limits set by Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Indian Point is no different. With valid state and federal permits in place, the facility has discharged treated water to the Hudson River since 1962. The data on the releases are publicly available on the NRC's website for Indian Point and all reactors," end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Tim Williams and Nick Reisman report for New York State of Politics that New York's tax on cigarette increases from $4.35 to $5.35 a pack in September. The State Department of Health says that an all-time low rate of New Yorkers are smoking now at 12%, but officials hope the higher tax rate will mean fewer than 1.7 million New Yorkers smoking regularly. Nationally, Sarah Ravenhall, executive director of the New York State Association of County Health Officials, says that every 10% increase in cigarette taxes reduced youth smoking by 7% and overall smoking rates by 4%. Lawmakers also proposed a menthol-flavored cigarette ban in the state budget, but that encountered opposition from some legislators who got it out of the budget. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Mid-Hudson News reports that Bard College wants to build 5 new dormitories and a performance lab on its Dutchess County campus. College officials went before the Dutchess County Local Development Corporation on May 23rd to get $155 million in tax-exempt bonds issued for the construction. The LDC board approved a preliminary inducement resolution, but now must hold a public hearing before the board takes a final vote on the request. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, it will be sunny with a high near 64 degrees. On Thursday night, it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 40 degrees. And on Friday, it will be sunny with a high near 70 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 44 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.